Welcome to the Perfectly Sancho episode 457. I am Chris, as always, joined by my high co-host, Tony.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm completely sober right now in every way.
In every single way. Yeah.
And slightly tipsy Earl.
I am also very sober, I tell you, in every single way.
A very sober podcast. Yeah,
I don't know if you folks can hear that. It is July 3rd, which means apparently everybody in my neighborhood sending off fireworks already. They've been sending this off like 2 weeks now.
It's like a day early, right?
I have fireworks. Honestly, but they've been doing it since I come back from Europe. It's been fireworks nonstop. I was coming home from work. They're sending off fireworks. And again, I like fireworks. It's broad day. You can't see shit. Why are you sending them off?
Because they like explosions, Earl.
Like, now at least it makes sense. It's after 9. It's dark. Whatever. Great. But I'm coming home. Broad day. The sun hasn't set. You're sending off fireworks. Nobody's going to see anything.
That is, like, do you see the people doing it? Like, are they just kids or...
It's not my neighborhood. Well, I mean, it's my area, but it's not like on my street. It's like further down. It's just, you know, fireworks you can hear.
Right.
So I just hear them all the time.
Yeah, no, it's like, I knew, like, you know, as a kid, like, get your hand on some like fireworks or something. And it didn't matter if it was dark or not. You just like to blow shit up and play with fire. So
that's right. It's about the explosion. Time of day is irrelevant.
Well, I think that's half true because, again, you actually want to see the fireworks. You do pay good money for them. And doing it in broad daylight when nobody can see anything defeats the purpose.
This is somewhat true. Well, tomorrow I assume that it'll just be going off nonstop in your neighborhood from the time you get up. So.
Which, again, I'm fine with, New York City, there are at least 5 different places I can go to see actual fireworks that I might go to tomorrow. And I have fireworks. I think they're amazing. They're spectacular. You have to see them. Like the explosion's one thing. Like the explosion to me just sounds like a car backfiring, which defeats the purpose.
Yeah, that's no fun.
That's okay. I can go see tanks. How about that?
You can go see tanks.
You go do that.
And
don't have enough money to actually go attend that event.
It's free. You can go see tanks for free.
You get preferential treatment if you donate it to them.
I can go see tanks for free too. I live near an armory. Sometimes they work on the tanks there.
See, there you go. And you don't even have to use money from the Parks Department.
No. Nor do I have to go and inhabit the same area space as the president. So,
Tony, yeah, I'm going to avoid the National Mall tomorrow at all cost.
It's probably a good choice.
That seems like a good idea.
There's also lots of MAGA people walking around. Oh. Little red hats. Just want to punch them.
Okay, so yes, I guess we're talking about video games at some point.
Well, some games did come out.
Yes, in the 2 weeks that I've been gone for a month.
Centuries.
So some stuff has come out while you've been away. We've talked about some of it, like Bloodstained. Jeff has played through that. Super Mario Maker, though, came out last week, Super Mario Maker 2.
Yes.
On the Switch, it is out. I haven't made any levels yet, but I played about 500 of them.
Well, I mean, I think that Super Mario Maker, which is a, you know, fine name, I think it's sometimes a misnomer. Because, yeah, there are a lot of people like myself. I'm not really that creative. So, like, I've tried to create levels and I'm working on stuff. But, like, I actually just prefer the idea of, like, going through all this random stuff that people create and seeing what people come up with, given these tools. I was not on the show for the first Mario Maker. But, Mario, to me, is probably the most universal language that video games has, and that everybody kind of understands how it works. You see a Goomba and you kind of automatically understand it walks from right to left on the screen and you jump over it and you jump on it to kill it and stuff like that. And I think being able to give people this set of tools that everybody kind of understands on a basic level and seeing what they come up with to kind of pervert that language has always been a fascinating experiment.
And they pervert it. They really do. Not so much with dicks, although I'm sure there's some of them. But just like they...
Everywhere. Dicks everywhere.
It's possible. But they break like the fundamental of Mario in some cases. Yeah. But before the show, we were talking, like, I think some of the creators kind of get wrapped up in trying to make it so hard that they kind of lose sight of like it actually being any good.
Yeah. And I think honestly from this game and the first one, I think that's probably the most important lesson to take away from that is that, you know, like everybody's always complaining about, you know, this, that, or the third with Mario games, is that it's much, much more difficult to actually make a really compelling good level than it is to just throw a bunch of crap at the screen and be like, get through this.
Yeah.
Like, I like the game, but I feel like, and I don't want to shag it, so I apologize for bringing this up, but it's kind of like Super Meat Boy.
Yeah. Yes.
Meatball Boy.
Where it's like, we're just going to put a lot of obstacles in your way, and you're going to find a way to navigate this. And granted, they have really great controls and a character that fits that world, but a lot of people try to mimic that with Mario, and it's like, this is kind of antithesis of what Nintendo designed this franchise to be. And I have it for that, but at the same time, you also kind of realize, like, you know, like everybody says, like, once Mario Maker 1 came out, Nintendo can never make a 2D Mario game again. And it's like, no, they can totally make a 2D Mario game again because nobody's trying to actually do what they do, which is to make good, compelling levels that build on themselves. Instead, it's like, we're going to do this really dumb gimmick that works, but it's not something they would do.
Now, I have come across, like, I mean, that's not to say that there aren't good levels made, because I have come across some, like, really smart levels, like puzzle solving, different from like what you would consider a normal Mario game, but fun and not like, oh, this was so, you know, this was so difficult, I'm glad I beat it. But no, it's like, that was smart usage of the tools that you had. I've come across somewhere they use the Super Mario Land Super Ball to like flip switches, and like unlock keys, and so you're trying to like, you know, navigate like a certain area by throwing the ball and trying to get it to go through this area and hit a certain thing in a certain order. Like some of them are like really cool, and like the thought process that somebody went through to come up with kind of like the machine to get it to work is awesome. And then there's like the ones that are just like, here's 1,000 fireballs and spinning, you know, fire wheels, and here's 27 bosses just jumping on the screen.
All like, in a row.
All in a row.
This isn't fun.
and we're not going to give you any power-ups, so you got
to
do right. it.
And you have to take down all the bosses without hitting the ground, because the ground is made of fire.
Yes.
Well, that's one thing. I've been playing a lot of like the endless mode, so you don't actually get to see the stats. But I do like when you go into the course world and you're pick, like if you're trying to just pick like one level at a time, it does give you like the completion percentage. So you'd be like, oh, like one person out of 780 has finished this level. I don't think I want to even try that. And hey, maybe it's a great level, I don't know, but I generally tend to stay away from those. But the story mode that they've included in this one is very good. The levels there also like are thinking outside of the normal Mario box, but very well designed, obviously, because they're, you know, from Nintendo. I'm having a blast with it. I think it's great.
Yeah, I think it's great. Like you said, I enjoyed that they actually included a story mode this time. I mean, it's a story mode, it's for Mario, but I enjoyed that they kind of made these challenges into some form of an actual consistent progressive thing. And I think it's great that Nintendo And I assume a lot of the developers probably had fun with this, where they were able to kind of create these one-off levels where it's not necessarily, again, kind of like reading a book where you, like, you know, you put something in chapter right. one, you pay it off in chapter two, and it builds on. It's like, yeah, no, we'll do this thing once. You'll never see it again, but we did it once.
Like the level I just beat before we started is this, like, it was this very slow, methodical, using a P block as like a lantern to get through the level because you can't see the environment otherwise. And I'll never see something like that again. There won't be another level like that out of like the 70 or 80 that they have. That's it. It's one off. It's done. And it was cool. I'm glad I got to play it, but I don't necessarily need more of those types of levels.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's great that they did a one off. There are, as always, because it's Nintendo, there are a lot of those weird kind of like, why'd you make this decision? I think the biggest one for people right now is the fact that you can play online, but you can play online with friends. We've discussed that before.
Right.
But I think the other one that a lot of people find weird is you can play Yoko Co-op, but you can't just play Yoko Co-op with random levels. You actually have to download the levels on your system first to then play them. So it's like you were going through Course World, which is just like, it's level after level of random levels that they decide to pick for you. And you can't do that with another person on your system.
Which sucks, because like the endless Mario challenge is awesome. Like just being able to go in, you pick like which difficulty level you want, and they keep dropping levels in that are in that kind of difficulty range. And that would be great to just play with somebody else. And I guess you can if you want to do it randomly, right?
Oh boy, and there's nothing like playing with randoms.
I mean, that is, but it's also weird because as far as I can tell, there's no actual real rhyme or reason as to the levels they pick, because some of the levels are clearly not designed for multiplayer.
And some of them are not designed to be played like with one person. Like,
yeah,
I came across some of those in, not so much in the endless mode, but when I was just going through early on when I got it. It's like, why is this friggin' thing so hard? I can't figure out what I need to do because, like, it looks like I need to hit that box over there, but then get over to here and hit that box, and I can't do it in the time they've set up. And it's because you're supposed to have somebody else with you on the level. I'm like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah, and you know, kind of going back to the point that's something that Nintendo wouldn't make. Like, you know, like there are in this one, while your brother. We and you are carry multiplayer centric games, but they're still designed in a way that you can beat the game on your own. They just like, oh, we're giving you more power ups, or we'll have like this bigger bridge so that people can kind of all inhabit the same space.
You keep disappearing, Earl.
Do you?
Where are you going?
You're fading out a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Come back.
Is it better now or no?
No, that's worse.
Oh, that's fun.
That's...
Now you sound fine.
Okay.
Nope, now worse.
I don't even know what's going on. I'm not doing anything.
Now better.
Stop drinking, Earl. That's the problem.
I mean, that's always a problem.
Or a solution. It depends.
But can you hear me now?
Yes.
Good!
What I was going to say is that it still inhabits the one problem that New Super Mario Brothers, Wii, and you introduced with multiplayer, in that not necessarily that people all inhabit the same space. It's that weird pause whenever somebody dies.
Oh, yeah.
Because it kills your momentum. Because it's like, if you're mid-air, the game will literally pause for a second so that you know somebody died. And...
that's bad in like a middle of a jump or doing anything fast. Yeah.
I don't know why they've added. I never got why they added that.
Yeah, not sure. I also would like to say, if anybody is listening and making levels, you don't need to make another iteration of Super Mario Brothers 1-1. Played about 50 of them now, so it's just like that's the one everybody kind of knows, right? It's It's my first level. I'm going to make the one I know.
And it probably was the easiest one to make. I mean, they've added some stuff now where you can make some of the other ones, but like Super Mario 1 is pretty straightforward. Yeah. Where like World and 3 add more verticality and stuff like that that you really couldn't do in the original Super Mario Maker. I think the biggest change in this game is the fact that you can do syrups now, which adds a lot of different type of momentum to the games and the courses you design.
Yeah. I really like the boss fights too. When they're added incorrectly.
Yes.
Often people don't know how to add them incorrectly, but.
Yes. Again, kind of going back to the same same thing of designing hard devils. People are just like, oh, we're just going to put bosses in the middle of the level. Like, it defeats the purpose of having a boss in the middle of the level. I know you're trying to be tough and creative. But if you get past it, it's like either this is a really dumb challenge or this is a really tough challenge that makes no sense here. And then if you get past it, it's like you have a whole nother level to go.
Yeah. Yes. One thing, and I guess this was something people really wanted to come into it anyway. So I wish that there would be a way to string together levels that you create, like kind of a world, but it's not there. It's upsetting, but we kind of knew that going in. It wasn't going to be a part of it.
Yeah, it's still weird. Because I remember that being one of the bigger things that people asked for with the original as well. It's the idea, like not even like a full Mario game, but maybe string together like 4 levels.
Yeah, like it doesn't have to be. We can all just like string together 8 or 10. Like, but 4 would have been nice. Like, you know, because it would allow creators to. You know, maybe not necessarily tell a story.
Oh, come on. You could tell a story in 3 levels.
You can.
If you're good, you could tell a story in 1 level. But to Chris's point, you kind of, like, if you wanted to kind of build that narrative arc, it would be great if you could do it over the course of multiple levels instead of, like, having to introduce everything into 1 level and hoping for the best.
But whatever. I think it's a great game, great addition to the Switch. It's great to just pop in and play. It's great for long sessions. Like, I can, you know, open it up, play a couple levels here, or Sunday I got sucked into and played like 4 hours straight, and it was 2 in the morning, and I was like, shit, oops. where did the time go?
I ruined everything for the rest of the weekend.
Yeah, basically. oops. But so that's out there. Anything else you guys have been playing?
I just started MLB The Show, finally.
Yeah.
It's baseball.
It is.
Good. I don't think I've gotten far enough, but it seems exactly like the last couple that I played.
Which is that's a thing with sport iterative sports games, right? Like, they don't make big enough iterations. I haven't played it in since the PS3, so it was a huge upgrade for me.
Like, the opening, like, tutorial stuff seems exactly like it was last year. Obviously, the choice of teams is better, but, you know.
Right.
Right, Earl?
Yeah, especially if you have America and Europe's number one team.
The Red Sox, that's right, they are featured.
And they may be featured, but if I'm not mistaken, you can correct me if I'm wrong, did the Yankees and Red Sox not both go to London this week? And did not one team win both games?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you over the sound of our parade. I can't hear it.
Your parade has passed.
No, it's so loud that you can still hear the sound reverberating through our atmosphere.
Oh, I guess you, it's, let me amplify it with our 27 rings. That
the last one, I don't remember. It's been so long.
It has not been that long.
You're talking about like ancient history, like the Romans went to those Yankee games.
I'm talking about this past weekend. Two teams entered, one team kicked ass. They showed Europe what baseball is. The other team was just kind of there.
I don't remember this.
No.
It was like a week ago. It's too long ago.
You remember parade from last year.
Well, parade's still going on. I mean, you can't stop that parade.
You can. When you beat them 2-0 in Europe.
That doesn't stop the parade.
It does. It's like an international vacation. You go, you sip some fine wine. Actually, England is not very known for its wine. I get some cider,
And it's
some
pretty bad, but
fish and
if you've got
chips.
a beer that's like weak, go
Yeah.
England.
Yeah, it's weird. I cannot find a beer that was over like 5.3%.
Yep.
It's I don't know
English
that.
style. It's not helping the alcohol.
It's weird because like even like as an aside, I mean we're already on the side. Like I went to Europe and like all these places, like the highest beer I found was probably 6%.
Did you go
And
to Belgium?
I did not go to Belgium.
You missed out.
Next time. But like they always talk about their big drinking culture. And I'm just like, oh yeah, this is awesome. And like you folks drink very, very weak beer.
German beer is not strong.
It's good, but it's not strong. Irish beer, strong. I mean, it's
Strong.
good, not strong. And yeah, and then I went to London, and they're all like, "What about the ciders?" And I'm like, "This is just really strange to me, to be honest with you." Like
Just have
I enjoy a good cider every now and then, but that's not my primary choice.
right.
But more.
They have like a lot of like what, like apple ciders and peach ciders and
Probably not even that varied.
I don't remember. Like it was favorite ciders, but yeah.
No. That's a shame. You went all the way there to try all their fancy beers and they did not
And
have any fancy.
again, I'm not saying it wasn't, like Ireland, for instance, is known more for its whiskey. Guinness is still great. But yeah, I was just kind of surprised because you have such a big craft brewery scene. You can usually find beers in the double digits most places. And then there, it's like a lot of them would top out at like 5%.
I don't understand it.
Yeah, it's also fascinating because, again, we're not talking about video games tonight, apparently.
What are video games? Let's talk about beer. Beer is much more interesting.
It is a great conversation. But yes, one of the big talking points I had with several people that I knew over there when I was visiting is like the difference between American and European drinking culture. And I think my big takeaway from that is like a lot of American drinking culture, especially when you're younger, is designed around the college experience. Because for most people in this country, you can't drink until you're either the back half of your junior year of college or a senior in college, which
Or you're
means,
not, can't drink legally.
yeah, well, that's what I was going to get to
Those
is that,
couple years before that, I drank quite a bit,
yes,
was
but I
not
assume you
legal.
also drink because but you can't drink in public, so you drink in houses and house parties and stuff like that.
Right.
And a lot of that then designs around like, oh, we're not just going to drink, we're going to turn this into an event. So it's, like beer pong and FIP Cup are kind of the defaults. But then you do stuff like keg stands and funnels and Edward 40 hands and power hour. And
What is Edward 40 hands?
you tie two 40s to your hands and
God.
you can't untie them until you finish both.
I just understood why I'd never heard of this before. Forties.
Not a big 40 drinker.
No, because they all suck.
Yes, but again, when you're in college, you don't know better because
I learned very quickly. You got to gravitate towards that good alcohol. The other stuff's not worth it.
oh no, in college I was, and I guess we could. I in college I was a very like Natty Ice, Coors.
Milwaukee's best.
No, I do not. Milwaukee's best is awful, 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 awful beer. And I swear to God, if I ever go to Milwaukee, I'm going to kick everybody in the ass, whoever produced that damn beer. Because if that's the best you have to offer, you should just disappear from the face of the earth.
Please stop, boy. It's like you guys can't release this. It's not good.
Release
No.
what? Release.
Yeah, it was. It's a, there are two beers that I've had that I've honestly can say that I just like I had them and I was like never again. One is Milwaukee's best. And the other is it's a Modelo crap, I forget what it's called, but it's like their Bloody Mary, so it's like their tomato and it was just really disgusting.
Tomato beer.
Yeah, I forget what it's called exactly.
But yeah, it's kind of like a
Clamato dreams. Enjoy.
And because I was not paying attention, so I went to the shop one day. I just grabbed the Mario. This is back when I was kind of unemployed, so these things are like $2 at the supermarket, and you just kind of. And I took like two sips, and I'm like, "This is disgusting. I'm gonna try to finish it." I took like two or three more sips, and I'm like, "You know what? I'm tapping out," and I just threw it out. And it's like literally the only beer I've ever thrown out. And then I bought a, you know, a beer, right? Varieties of Spice of Life. I saw Milwaukee's Best in like a CVS one day, and I'm like, "Oh, you know, I've never had this. Let me just get egg."
Purchased it knowing what it was?
No, I didn't know what it was. I make it's like Milwaukee's Best. I'm like, "Oh, this can't be that bad."
Yes, but how can you reach like the age of 21 and have not heard of it?
Oh, because I okay. So to go back a bit, I guess I didn't start drinking until I was 20. So, and my drinking experience was very limited. Like the first thing I really gravitated towards was like wine coolers because they have a nice refreshing taste and they have the same alcohol content as beer. And to I'm a bit of a nerd. I think it's Smirnoff that has like the bat logo, and I mean I'm a Batman fan, so that kind of helped too.
They are tasty.
Yeah, and they're pretty good. I still drink them. And then like as I you know as like, so it's my 20th birthday, so this is April of my junior year of college, and then like a lot of people were like, "Oh, you know, rum and cokes were a big thing, so we had a lot of rum and cokes junior year." And I, you know, just to jump ahead a bit, I do not do rum and cokes anymore because it's such a basic drink and it's so boring. Yeah, and then once I got into, and I didn't, you know, I, you know, summer vacation, I didn't really drink. I don't drink at home a ton. So I got back to school and it's like the same stuff. You get Natty, you get Coors, you get, literally anything you could get at a gas station that's like a 12 pack fake. $5 is what you drank in college. Like my beer choice in college was Miller's High Life, which is you get a 12 pack for like $8-$9. The champagne
of beer. Did you have a job when you were in college? Just wondering.
I had a work study job. So like you get minimum wage and you work like 5 hours a week. But yes. So, you know, my High Life champagne and beer was my go-to. But you go to house parties and everybody would have like a keg or something. And you drink whatever. I mean, at least for me, in college, you drink whatever people offered or whatever was at that party because it's like you didn't have any money, so you didn't have a choice. Right. And then the one thing I don't get or I don't know the timeline for personally is when I made that jump from I'm not drinking this crappy beer to I have this really – I mean of my friends, my immediate circle in New York City, I'm probably considered the beer snob. I'm the person who's going to go to a bar and like, "Oh, I want an IPA. I want an lager." Like, I know what the differences are where I have friends who are just like, "Oh, I just drink this. I don't know what it is." Like one of my favorite bars to go to is a place called Randolph Beer Hall in Brooklyn, and that's because you can go and they have something like 20 beers on tap and you can pour as much as you want. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go there. I'm going to shampoo everything they have to kind of refine my palate and figure out what I enjoy and what I don't. The one thing I don't really care for that I keep on getting anyhow, I don't like stouts.
How dare you?
I know.
I'm offended by this.
I know it's one of those things that I feel like I should enjoy because stouts tend to be higher in alcohol content, the darker, the richer flavors. But I think I think they're too rich in flavor for me.
Too much flavor for you. I knew you couldn't handle flavor.
I like a stout.
I can't do stouts. I mean, I can do stouts, but I just don't enjoy them as much.
It's a sign of internal weakness, Earl. You need to enjoy a stout.
I can't do an IPA, though.
Oh, my God. Oh, there's something wrong with both of you. Those are like the two highest forms of beer.
I can do IPAs all day. I mean, my personal preference is a sour. It's a nice like, goose.
I do like a good sour. I do.
The problem is, one, finding a good – like most places I go to will probably have like one or two sours on tap.
And then sours tend to be the ones that you get a smaller sample of. Like most sours tend to be like 8 or 10 ounces. And I get it because it's really, again, they tend to be stronger and they taste more flavorful. But again, like most places I go to have like one or two sours on tap. So it's always kind of like, and then like, it's weird because you ask people and a lot of bartenders won't know what their sours are.
Right? I don't know. I feel like anything that's not an I, it, like they all know who the IPA is. They can like tell that immediately. But beyond that, most servers aren't that knowledgeable unless you're in an actual beer place.
Yeah, and I mean, I think some places have gotten better at it, just being proactive. I went to, like, for lunch today, I went to a dinosaur barbecue in Brooklyn, and like their thing has like it tells you the percentage of alcohol, and it also tells you the type of beer it was. So if it's a Kosh, if it's a lager, if it's an IPA, if it's a pale ale, whatever. And I'm like, okay, he's there being proactive about that. Even the way I got into sours was I went to a bar in Seattle. And they had, I forget what it's called. It's like the IBU or something like that, which is like the bitterness factor of the beer. And a lot of places,
International Brewing Units.
yes.
Yes.
And a lot of places will not have that. And I was surprised when they had it. I'm like, oh, I want to try the highest percentage on this thing just because. And that's kind of how I got into sours. And this was back when I went to PAX like 5 years ago. So yes. So
Okay.
yes, to go back to my story on way around, yes, because a lot of people learn to drink in college, we do all this very stupid nonsense. We're out of other European countries and Canada, you know, even Canada, because the drinking age is like 16, 17, 18, 19, you kind of learn to drink with your parents or around other people at a younger age, so you're a bit more responsible when you drink. Or you don't necessarily have that same college mentality where it's like, I'm going to go to a house party, I'm going to get really messed up. So you drink excessively to impress people. And like I said, like I was telling people, I was just trying to explain to people, like people, you know, everybody knows what a keg is, but they're like, yeah, I've never done a keg stand. I've never done a funnel. And I'm like nobody knew what powwow was. I'm just like, wow, I don't like it's so different from my drinking education.
Don't know,
And
where I grew up, you could like drive over the border and drink legally.
yeah, and a lot of people did that, until we really kind of screwed up our Canadian borders. Because like it used to, like I think when we were younger, yeah, you used to be able to drive over to Canada with just your driver's license.
Yep.
Now you actually need your passport or a passport ID.
Yep. For some of us, though, this was before 9/11, so you didn't have to worry about that stuff.
Okay, I'm definitely not that old. But yes, and just kind of as a quick primer for anybody listening to this who's like not into big drinking cultures or whatever, I think a keg stands pretty self.
Bad.
I think keg stands pretty self-explanatory. You drink from a keg upside down. Funnel,
Use a funnel.
you funnel, you then see shotgun a beer or two. I forget how much actually fits in a funnel. I think it depends on who's using it.
Who designed the funnel?
On how big a funnel you get, right?
Yeah. I've never done this, but I knew friends in college who did the Statue of Liberty, which is like a two-story funnel.
That's impressive.
Yes. Power hour is you take a shot of beer for every minute in an hour,
We've
which
done
I
that
think,
on the podcast.
yes, I think that works out to something like 5.5 beers or something like that.
It's a lot of alcohol and
Remember when was it Jeff and Fozzie did it?
yeah,
Chris and I are a little saner about that kind
that didn't go well.
of thing.
They also did actual shots like 5 minutes apart. 1 year, so that did not go well either.
Yeah, I can't imagine that's gonna go well at all. And what was the final one? Oh, and I already explained Edward 40 Hands. Were there anything that you folks did that was, let's say, it's an ideal in college or before that with drinking?
I mean, nothing outside of like that. Like it's, people go drink in the woods and shit around here, but no, like attaching 40s to your hands with duct tape and drinking them.
I mean, everybody drinking games, obviously.
Yeah,
I played lots of beer pong, lots of flip cup. But I don't know. I used to love sake bombing.
And, what is sake bombing?
It's a shot of Sapporo, or not a shot, a glass of Sapporo and a shot of sake. And what you do is you balance the glass of sake on top of chopsticks at the table. And then you bang on the table, the chopsticks move apart, the glass of sake falls into the glass of Sapporo, and then you drink the whole thing down.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of work.
Sounds like a very, like, elaborate, like, Irish car bomb.
Yep. Yes.
Yes, we used to do those, too. That was my other favorite thing.
Yes, Irish car bomb. What's the other one? What is it? It's a...
Boilermaker.
No, not the Boilermaker. It's a car bomb as well. Is it? It's the one with the Red Bull and vodka. No, it's a... Wait, which one is the Irish car bomb? Is that the Guinness and...
It's Guinness and Bailey's and whiskey, technically, if you do it correctly.
Yeah, and Jameson. Yep.
Yes. I forgot what the other one's called. Yes, I used to do cement mixes with Zachary or Yaku, but not for everybody, which is Bailey's and lime juice.
Oh, why would you do that to yourself?
That sounds like it would curdle.
Curdle the Bailey's and drink it down. That's disgusting.
Well, that's the exact point. It's like it's because you're supposed to put both in your mouth and you shake it about, and it kind of curdles in your mouth and creates that.
Oh God!
Yeah, yes, it creates that weird texture in your mouth. And cement mixer. I did the one that a lot of people always give me grief for is I used to do something called a chili willy.
The fact it's called a chili willy and you still
did it. Name.
I mean, it's a great. It's a Mega Man billion.
Were you frozen through and through? I'm just wondering.
Well, no. So what you did with that one is you took a shot glass, you flipped it upside down, you poured vodka on like the rim of it, and then you snorted it through your nose. And yes, that's the reaction I tend to get.
Why?
Do you drink alcohol through your mouth?
Well, I
mean, you know, alcohol. That's the way it goes. There's no other entry point for
it's not a snortable.
Well, it is if you try hard enough.
You can snort anything, and that deserves it.
But yes, I did a lot of those in my 20s, and
that explains a few things. Okay.
Explains a lot of stuff. I explain to people my college years were not my best decision making time.
It's generally not most people.
It's not most people's. No, it's not at all. Okay.
You're the first person that's heard snort for alcohol. Hey, I'm sure that is not the worst thing I've heard people do. So,
I've heard other places you put alcohol.
I just say, to be fair to me, I graduated college before people started putting it up their butts. Yep. So, I got that going.
Just don't, like that to me doesn't even like. That doesn't even seem like it would be any fun. Like,
no, I enjoy the idea of kind of just being creative with alcohol because people like we once did something that's not a great name, something called the gas chamber shot.
Oh,
not a great name.
Doing a car bomb is pretty bad too.
Yep. Yeah. I frankly would say that's offensive.
Yep. Never go to an Irish bar and order an Irish car bomb. It's a bad idea.
So with the gas chamber shot, it is an actual shot that they set on fire, and then once they set it on fire, they then put a glass on top of it, and that kind of soaks up some of the alcohol fumes. You cover that, you take the shot, and you stick a straw through that glass, and you
you suck in the rest of the alcohol fumes.
Kind of like smoking the fumes away. Yeah. Got it.
That was actually pretty decent. This was a bachelor party, I think. And that was funny because I think the bride had actually ordered in 20 of those shots for the bachelor party. And at that point, you can't say no because it's already paid for.
That's right.
But in my defense, I've become a lot more married in my 30s. I don't just randomly drink anything. Well, okay, I'll still drink anything people put in front of me. Most people become less adventurous in their 30s, so they won't put random crap in front of you.
You choose the people who are putting stuff in front of you better now.
You've decided. Yes, there we go. Or the people who put stuff in front of you in your 20s are now in their 30s as well, and they can't do that as well either.
No, and they, well, in my case, they do it worse, so it's like I've lucked out. I didn't really like doing that in the first place, but you're buying this shot, so I guess I'll do it. But now they're like, I can't drink that much anymore. Okay. I can still hold my liquor, but I never really wanted to do those weird things that you were putting in front of me anyway.
Yeah. It is so weird. I'm always like, I'm hoping, like, it's a weird thing to wish for, but I'm always hoping that my tolerance goes down because, like, one, when you go out, it's like super expensive.
Yeah. I'm very expensive.
Yeah, I always tell people, like, when people say I have a tolerance, like, you're just a cheap date, because it's, I would love to go out and just spend like $20 to get drunk.
Yeah,
that's me taking my wife out. I mean, she's two drinks in, done.
Same thing here.
I'm on my sixth drink, and you probably wouldn't notice too much of a difference for me. Or the fact that I refilled my drink while we were talking at some point. When I was in London, I went to a bar. I was just kind of hanging out. I went to a dive bar. And the happy hour special was like 2 beers for £5 or something like that. So I'm like, of course I'm going to do that. And then the bartender's like, oh, the house special is like 2 for $10. And he did like, it's not on the menu or anything. It's just like a container on its own. It's called Whoop Ass. So I asked him what's in it. He's like, it's rum, spiced rum, dark rum, overproof rum. And well, then,
rum.
Yeah. And then he's like, oh yeah. And then there's like juice in there for flavor. And in my head, I'm like, this just sounds like a really bad idea. But it was $7.50 for one or $10 for $2. And I'm just like, that $10 for $2 so much of a better deal. So I got 2 of those.
Well, didn't need to, but you got them.
I didn't. Yeah. And then while I'm up there, like, you know, like it's a bar's owner. He's making friends and stuff like that. So there's some Asian woman that he makes friends with. And, you know, they're being nice. I'm at the bar sitting there talking to everybody. So he's giving us free shots. He's like, oh, I think we start off with like a shot of like a vanilla liqueur, which is actually really good. And then it worked up to bourbon. And I'm like, okay, I've had these 2 beers, this 2 whoop-ass, the shot of another thing, and then I actually had another drink after this because I'm an idiot. And then he's like, oh yeah, we're going to have a shot of bourbon. I'm like, okay, I'm all for it.
I'm in. And
I do that, and I'm just like, I need to. And at this point, I hadn't eaten in like 8 hours. So I'm like, okay, going to go get food.
Was this when I was like,
yes, this is when
to not eat, like,
yes,
drinking. There's like food and alcohol.
Yes, and this is when I ended up going back to that bar after the fact and getting like 2 Guinnesses. Yes, it was a vacation. Earl makes very dumb decisions.
Sure,
but yes,
smart on vacation.
But yes, to get back to my initial point, it's like, I really wish I could have been like, I could have cut myself off after like 3 drinks and like, I'm fine. But the fact is, I didn't feel drunk, so I'm like, I can keep going. And then it hit all at once, I went home. But I was on the, like I said, I got on the bus. I'm like, oh, I feel sober now. So I stepped in another bar to get some Guinness. And I felt fine. I had 2 Guinness. I'm like, I'm fine. Welcome to the next day. I'm just like, this was a terrible, terrible decision all around.
Ah, that's okay.
It was not. Well, I mean, it was okay. It worked out. I made it home. That's all that matters. Yes.
What were we talking about?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
Donald Trump.
Oh, we're talking about tanks on. I think the
tanks
mall.
On the mall. How did that?
Somehow we ended up here.
Sometime thousands of years from now, historians are going to look back at this conversation. They're going to try to track it. They're going to be all confused.
I mean,
what is this? What is happening?
It all makes sense if you think about it. It does not.
Nothing makes sense. No.
You have to really think about it, though. Really think about it. So on your flight, which was about 8 hours?
Yeah.
Did you end up playing anything?
So the game I've been playing mostly on my vacation was A Fire Emblem Warriors.
Video games.
Yes, video games. like Hyrule Warriors, and you know, I was got into the Dynasty Warriors game. And Fire Emblem Warriors is fine. I think the biggest two differences to me is, and I think you can turn this off, I've not turned it off yet, I should, is that it functions like a Fire Emblem game, so all the characters level up independently, which I'm fine with. The problem is, it stops the game every time somebody levels up to tell you that they leveled up, and you go through the stat screen, and I'm like, this is super annoying when you're actually in combat, that a character leveled up, and it's like, oh, we're going to do this whole spiel, we're going to give you the stats, and I'm like, can't you just save this at the end of the chapter?
Yeah, which would make sense. Like, that's where it belongs.
Yeah, like I don't want to turn it off. I don't want to turn it off because I actually do want to know when the characters level up, but I don't want to know it in the middle of my game. Like most RPGs level you up at the end of the battle, not in the middle of the chapter. And then the other thing is that it still has that fire, the triangle, you know, sword beats axe beats lance, lance beats sword.
Like a rock, paper, scissors type
thing. From the fire. And I feel like it does not work as well in a game like this. Like, yes, it makes sense that like, there are these things, but I'm like, yeah, I'm just kind of pressing the X button repeatedly. I don't really care about this. Like, there's not as much strategy that goes in there in my head.
Well, yeah, and those types of games, they're more like just kind of like mash on your buttons, right? Like you're just trying to kill as many enemies as possible. Like adding in like weird rock, paper, scissor mechanics is strange.
Yeah, again, I get that they're trying to mimic the games that they're based off of, and it's great that. But yeah, a lot of the decisions are just really. It's like, oh, this is a great decision if you were making a Fire Emblem RPG, not necessarily if you're making a Fire Emblem beat 'em up.
Right. Still, never played a Fire Emblem game.
No, are you interested at all in the Three Houses?
I don't know.
I think that I assume they're more Tony's speed, but I do find them enjoyable games. You know, strategy RPGs are a different type of beast, but they're still fun. And I think really I got into it mostly with Awakenings on the 3DS, and I think a lot of that had to do with, you know, the buddy up system and a lot of the battle animations that they created for that game. It is overtly very anime-esque in that design, but it helped. And I think a lot of the characters are fun and interesting and creative.
Cool.
And again, because I'm a noob at these games and stuff like that, I still play in the casual way where like your characters can be KO'd in battle, but they'll come back. I don't necessarily care to play with permadeath.
Yeah, I would quickly end up with not having a team.
Yeah.
It's like a... I mean, I it's one of the things with XCOM. It's like you're trying to protect those people. It's like when they die, it's like, oh no. But in like an RPG, like you're putting so much more time into it that
when one of those somebody permadeath after 60 hours, you're like, oh god, what? This is no, my save game is worthless.
What has happened? So Fire Emblem Warriors. I'm trying to lose track now. Fire Emblem Warriors, that's on the Switch, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So how was your?
I guess technically the 3DS, if you care for that.
How was your Switch battery life on your flight?
I mean, that type of game is not the. It's a battery killer. It's the same thing with Hyrule Warriors. I can see the it's a battery killer, and it also takes a performance hit, but it's playable. Like, it's fine. I don't necessarily have an issue with it. But again, I'm early on in the game, so I haven't had a lot of stuff thrown at me.
Right.
I know with Hyrule Warriors, for example, in the back half of the game, when there's like a lot of enemies and bosses on the screen, the system really does start taking a hit. But I've not had that with Fire Emblem yet.
I'm hoping that at some point we get news of like an upgraded Switch with a little more power. I don't know if they'll do it, but that would be nice. So that like stuff like Fire Emblem Warriors, Hyrule Warriors, or like Bloodstained don't take that performance hit. Tony, besides baseball, you play anything?
Just Three Kingdoms, but I don't have anything new to say yet.
No, I'm not. I played a bunch of stuff. We talked a little bit about Riverbond a couple weeks ago, I think. It's like a voxel-based, kind of Diablo-ish, top, three-quarter top-down hack and slash. That's fun. It's really easy, 1,000 points, if you want. You basically just have to play the game.
Really?
You can get just about everything. I missed one secret. I had 52 of the 53 achievements playing through. And I just had to go back and get one, which was like, it was on the first boss area. And the third mission, so like I don't know, 5-10 minutes into the game, so just like 5-10 minutes of backtracking, and I had all 53 of the achievements. So yeah, very very easy, very cutesy, and it's part of Game Pass. Also part of Game Pass, Moonlighter. I think Peter played some of this. It is a Zelda-ish. It's a mix of like Zelda dungeon crawler with a shopkeeping town building mechanic. So like half of the game is like you play the Moonlighter who goes into these dungeons, which are set up just like a 2D Zelda dungeons, with like enemies and puzzles to solve. And then a boss at the end of them, and all the while you're like collecting stuff to sell in your store during the day. And so that's an interesting one.
So wait, so you're going into dungeons and like taking down enemies and getting chests and whatnot, and then the other half of the game is just like opening a shop and selling the stuff that you collected.
You open a shop. you have a shelf with like 4 slots. And you put stuff on your shelf and you set the pricing, and then you open the shop and like people will just like wander in and they'll buy stuff. And like that's how you get your gold. And then you can like buy stuff out in the town, or you can upgrade the town to get like new stuff, which doesn't make any sense. Like you're a shopkeeper and you're like, I want to build a, bring in a blacksmith who is going to sell stuff that I also sell. It's a little weird, but. It's kind of fun. Like I enjoyed like the little bit I played of it. I was just playing it for the Xbox Rewards achievements. Mm-hmm. But I played for a couple hours and it was cool. I think it's a game I think that like Jeff would really get behind because of like the Zelda dungeons, and then he got into like Stardew Valley. So like that whole aspect of it, I think
right
would run up his alley. Astroneer, you guys heard of that one?
No.
Play as like an astronaut that crash lands on a planet, and it's kind of like No Man's Sky-ish when you start. It's a survival type game. where you're ripping up, mining like certain things to mix with other things so that you can build components for your ship or to get oxygen or whatever. I only played a little bit of it. I didn't really like how it controlled, but I think it's also on like PC, so it seems like mouse and keyboard might be a better way to play that game. Mm-hmm.
You said it was on Game Pass. Is that Game Pass for PC as well?
I don't know. I should check that out. I haven't really like looked into the PC Game Pass stuff yet. I should, because I have it, but there's just
did,
so
big. Did you install it? There's like a whole.
Oh, is there a, there's like a whole like app or something that you need to have installed? Yep. I didn't know that.
All right, Ashnir's not in the.
Okay. Life is Strange Before the Storm, which is like that weird middle Life is Strange game. It's like a prequel to the original Life is Strange. There's no, you don't have any like magic powers to turn back time or anything. It's just a straight adventure game.
If I could turn back time,
then you'd be playing the original Life is Strange.
Well, I mean,
or
would I?
Quantum Break. Quantum Break, would you could turn back time too, right?
I don't know. I don't think that has a song for it.
Quantum Break doesn't have a song.
I don't know any Quantum Break. I know Quantum Leap. If that
Quantum Leap was a TV show, yep. Life is Strange Before the Storm is a good adventure game. Another good adventure game, puzzle game too, is this game called Last Day of June, which if you have the Epic Game Store, they've been giving away games like weekly.
Well, if you don't have Epic Games, so you're missing out because that's where all the games are going.
Exactly. I have like 20 some games through them, and I haven't bought anything yet. So.
But that's working out well for them. That's a nice little racket you have going there.
Yeah, you keep giving me free games. I will keep grabbing them, and occasionally I will play them.
I know people hate Epic Games Store, but I'm like, they are doing a great job of bribing me.
Yeah, that's, I take free stuff. You give me free stuff, I will take it. Sometimes I won't play it, but
I don't even have Epic Game Store. But because I have an Epic account from like other games, I'm like, oh, I can just sign in, get free games.
Yeah, there you go.
If I ever actually use Epic Game Store, I have a connection going.
But I played this game. It came out. It's a couple years old now, but it was the free game last week for Epic Games. It's called Last Day of June, and it is a puzzle or adventure game about this guy who he gets in a car accident with his wife who is about to have a baby, and they die. So it starts out like very sad. And then the puzzle is you're reliving the day over and over from the perspective of the people you interacted with that day, trying to save her. And the puzzles are pretty cool. It's interesting once you start adding extra people in. Like the first one, it's like, oh, well, if the little boy plays with the kite instead of with the ball, he doesn't end up in the street, which then caused the car to the driver to swerve and crash to go. The neighbor who needs the string for the kite, then like you need to find a way to kind of work the two out so that they can both interact and live. And so they keep adding like variables to it, and you have to keep trying to solve it.
So this is essentially, I guess, it's essentially video game Groundhog Day.
Yes, in a way. Except it's tragic.
Well, Groundhog Day is a tragedy.
What?
Yeah. It's
oh my frank. God, I didn't see my shadow. Oh no.
Well, I mean, like the Bill Murray movie.
Yes, but
that movie is a tragedy. I agree.
It is. It's a great movie, but I mean, essentially, it's a guy reliving the same. Like, I think people worked it out that he lived the same day for something like 30 years.
It's terrible. Yes, but you know, he ultimately lives, right? Like, and like that set up to be more comedic in tone. Whereas this isn't very, like, you know, you're dealing with death and loss and grieving. And so, yes, but conceptually, it is relive the same day over and over again to make the choice to break the chain. That's a very touching, it's nice. It's like 3.5 hours long. I wouldn't say it's a nice game, but.
Just said it was.
Well, it's a well-made game. It is a sad story. Even the ultimate outcome is also touching and sad. So
I was going to ask about that, but I figured it would be a spoiler if you ultimately could save them, but I take it you cannot. But we do not have to answer that. Let's move on.
Fair enough. And the only other thing I played was Gears of War 4.
Oh, I guess my invite was lost in the mail somewhere.
I was gonna say we should they evidently added in a shorter horde mode called Frenzy.
That would be great because we used to play horde mode and we get up to like the problem with horde mode in that game was that if you died in the later levels you were pretty much screwed.
Yep.
So they, I think Stop it's called.
Barking, Earl.
I will try.
They're called Horde Light or a Frenzy. I'm not sure which. I haven't dug deep enough, but there's achievements for playing, basically a shorter version of Horde, which is half the level, so it's only 25.
Do 25.
I would say, yeah, because 50 was taking us 3 hours. Or more to do, which that's a commitment.
That was the problem with Horde in original Gears 2 and Halo ODST is that it was an hour and a half of continuous gameplay. And if you got everything right,
yeah.
If you screwed up, you had to start again, and it's you can only do that so many times before it just we have lives.
So. Since there are new achievements in Gears 4, which isn't why I jumped into it, but it's not.
Uh-huh.
I jumped into it because it
because of the new achievement.
So Xbox Rewards gives you rewards points for getting achievements in certain games.
You did it for the achievements, but you didn't do the achievements for the achievements. You did the achievements for the points.
Yes, I did it. Did it for the money points. So I went in knowing you need to get an achievement in any of the Gears of War games. So I looked up the achievements. And I'm like, what's the easiest one to get? And I was like, destroy. In Gears 4, you have the card packs, right? It's destroy one of those cards, and that's an achievement. They added that, I guess, after the fact, after we stopped playing it at some point. So that's really easy. I'll just go in and do it. I went in, and 7 achievements popped. And then there's what they're calling the Road to Gears 5, which is they're 0-point achievements, but they're multi-level quests.
You lost me at 0-point achievements. I mean, what am I doing at that point?
You're achieving nothing. That's what it's telling you.
You're ultimately achieving 0 points.
I might as well be playing my Switch. I mean,
fair enough.
But, burn your copy of Gears of War 4. There's 0-point achievements. It's not worth it.
You're doing it to get unlocks in Gears 5.
So it's kind of what a lot of people do with betas and stuff, where it's play this beta and you'll unlock this special emblem.
Exactly. And this is if you if you unlock 50 achievements, right, you'll unlock an achievement in Gears that is for the Gilded Marcus. So it's Marcus all in gold set up. And then if you get 250 kills in versus multiplayer, it's a 0-point achievement, but it'll give you a gilded swarm character. So there's a bunch of things you can do to get unlocks in Gears 5. And I was All right. Well, one of them looks pretty easy. It's play five of this one mode. And that'll unlock Gilded Kate or something like that. So I was like, I started playing that. And it's like, Escalation was a damn good multiplayer mode. It's long. It's like a half hour game. So you have to jump in. It's 13 rounds. And it's basically King of the Hill, but in each one round, like the losing team of the previous round gets to put a new weapon on the board of escalating damage. So like you start off with like, oh, you can add like the Boltok pistol, which is like the kind of like the Desert Eagle type gun. It's like a strong pistol, but it's still just a freaking pistol. But then like the second one is like you add in the torque bow and then the boom shot, and it's like you're adding in, you're escalating up, but also when you die, the penalty escalates as well. So instead of respawns being 10 seconds, they jump to like 12, 14, 16 as each round goes. And that game mode is a ton of fun. Also, I was doing well in it, which was surprising because I never do well in multiplayer Gears. And they must have just been like, oh, we're going to put you with all the scrubs because you haven't played in a while. I was like, yes, put me with all the scrubs because that's where, please, I belong.
Every time I dominate the scrubs.
I belong with the scrubs.
Okay. But yes, I shall get back into the Gears of War business at some point.
Yeah.
I was not around for I was not like I was dead or anything, but I was not here for E3 to discuss it. Did you folks do that Ultimate Game Pass deal?
Oh yeah, I did. You have to do it for a dollar. It counts. I don't know if you had this problem, Chris, or problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, benefit. So both of my subscriptions ended in September, but when I upgraded for a dollar, my Ultimate went all the way through February.
Oh, nice. Mine's through May of next year.
Yeah, they stack them instead of, like, I thought they would count against each other. Like, you know, you have the same months.
Yeah, so you would only get it till September, but yeah.
They give you both.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Yeah, mine's just through April, I think, of next year now. I have not actually used the benefit a ton, but I have the option to. I think I downloaded Sea of Thieves and some other game. But no, that was, I guess just kind of give my brief thoughts. I thought Microsoft had an interesting press conference that should have pruned like 30 minutes.
Yeah, it was a little long.
It was a little long, and it was also really odgy paced. Still not as bad as Ubisoft. It's been almost a month, and I still don't get the point of having Mac from Always Sunny come out to talk about a TV show. I don't know what that TV show has to do with Ubisoft.
I don't know.
It's not an Ubisoft game. They're not making an Ubisoft game. It's not produced by Ubisoft. I don't.
The whole thing seemed like it. Like, we don't have a whole lot to show, so we're going to fill it with this weird thing that's tangentially related to games because it's a TV show about games, I guess.
It was an odd decision. I did not see EA because I value my time in Europe.
You didn't miss anything, believe me.
I missed Star Wars, which, I mean, I'm happy that somebody's making Uncharted games, I guess.
Yeah, so evidently that game is more than what they showed, which, you know, makes sense. But
which makes sense, but they showed like half an hour of it, and it's like it's Uncharted with lightsabers.
Yeah, which... Hey, like, if that's all it was, I'm on board. Like, give me Uncharted with lightsabers. But evidently, it's more than that. Like, you're traveling to different planets, and there's some sort of, like, upgrade mechanic or something, like an RPG. And it's more, I've heard it referred to as kind of like Metroid-ish.
Oh, okay.
The way, like, I guess, and I don't know how that'll work with these different worlds, but... as Jeff reminded me, like Metroid Prime, I guess you jumped from world to world and in a couple of them. So,
well, in the third one, yeah.
But yeah, so that was all that EA really had to show.
I think, and I, you know, again, I'm repeating stuff that has been said ad nauseum elsewhere, But I was surprised by just the utter lack of anything really Anthem related.
Yeah, Anthem got like a mention in like the intermission between their sessions.
Yeah, but like no, because I mean I could be mistaken, but when Anthem came out, before it came out, they had that like roadmap that everybody does, and Anthem was like, "Oh, we're gonna do X, Y, and Z by like this." I mean, some of it was like April, which clearly never happened, but some of it was like, "We'll do this by like the summer," and it's like, "Yeah, none of this has happened."
They have given up. It's dead.
I wonder if they're gonna go for a No Man's Sky and just do like one massive update that kind of transforms the game.
Like either like, hey, we're gonna invest a little bit more into this and do like this big thing, and if that clicks, kind of like No Man's Sky did with their big thing, then like good for us. But otherwise, if not, we're gonna pull the plug on this and never mention it again.
Yeah,
it's fair. I don't know. It was on sale. I think, was it last week for like $24?
Oh, yeah. I got it for $20, so I have it somewhere.
I almost bought it, but then I was like, it's got to be showing up on EA Access soon. I don't know. Maybe I'm just like thinking it's that bad, but EA hasn't released a whole lot either. So, like, what else are they going to drop in there? They release a new game every month, so at some point they're going to have to put it in there. I'd like that. Although, Tony, you didn't really like it, did you?
It was fine, I guess. I mean, I there are like mechanics there that are good, but the core part of the game, like the actual campaign and like the missions, they all just needed work. I don't know. I didn't love it.
Well, maybe once that once it hits EA Access, I'll play it with you guys.
Sure, that should be any day now too.
I hope, right?
You get like 6 months away from the release.
Hey, when did it come out? February.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, so maybe next month.
Right after Madden comes out.
Yeah. And maybe they'll give it to me for my birthday in EA Access in August. It'll be good. Anything else from E3 that stuck out to you, Earl?
I mean, Nintendo stuff was good. Sony was not there. Nope. Bethesda kind of was there.
Yeah, I guess.
I think that's the extent of Bethesda. There was not a ton of, I mean, okay, my big takeaway from E3 was, and I assume that this was everybody, it was a transitional year. You could tell it's the year between consoles wherein nobody can really talk about that stuff. Like, I assume there's games that are currently next gen that they couldn't say was next gen because even though Microsoft and Sony announced their systems, that's all they've announced.
Right, but you don't want to be like, hey, no, this is definitely for whatever's coming next.
Yeah. And because like both of them announced their system, but it's another year and a half out, it's like we still have to sell you stuff this gen. And you can kind of see a lot of people stretching that. Like, I had Square press conference, but when you kind of look back, it's like they've had one original game in that thing, and that was the Avengers game that was announced, 2.5 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two and a half. We still haven't seen the Guardians game either, have we?
Did they announce a Guardians game?
I thought so. Crystal Dynamics is working on the Avengers game, right? The Tomb Raider guys.
Yes.
And the Deus Ex people were supposed to be working on a Guardians game.
Ah, okay.
But we haven't heard anything on that one. I don't know. Were you guys impressed with the Avengers stuff? Like, I didn't think it looked great.
The character models all looked really weird.
They all looked like
it's that budget Sonic model. Why is Sonic the Hedgehog here?
It's that weird thing where they're trying. It's like when, you know, like you have like those video games influenced by movies, but you can't do movie actors. So you get sound alikes. And it's weird. It's weird when you do sound alikes, but it's like, it's whatever. This is like, oh, we're going to get sound alikes and we're going to look at X as well. And it's kind of like, I can kind of see Robert Downey Jr. in you, but I also know you're not him.
It was like they got their stunt doubles to be right, like, exactly. We couldn't get the people, so we got the people who play them.
Yes, I think the, comment I saw is like, this is like the Walmart branded Avengers. So it's like, I don't want to get the name brand, but I'll get something close to it. I will be honest with you, and part of it is because it's out much sooner. I think Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 looks better.
Yeah, I'm excited for that.
And I think part of that is because it's gone for its own thing, and it's not trying to be like this. Okay, and I guess the other thing for this game, and it's just, it could just be my, it's like, I don't necessarily know what it is, because I don't know if you play as an Avenger or you play as an original character in this universe. And I don't know, like, because the way they have it set up, that it's like 5 years after this big Avenger event that Captain America dies in, apparently. It's like, how do you design an RPG around that where it's like you're Iron Man and you're trying to learn how to be Iron Man?
Right. Because Iron Man should be, you know, well in the Iron Man.
Iron Man. I don't know.
Someone shooting at things? What's happening?
Fireworks again. I told you, fireworks all the time.
No one in DC wants to celebrate America, so no fireworks here.
To be fair, I can't imagine why DC. I mean, you folks are going to have the party of the summer in tomorrow. You're going to have tanks. You're going to have fireworks. You're going to have speeches by presidents.
The mall is dead to me until some day it's not the 4th of July.
It shall be legend. Wait for it.
Are they going to fire the tanks? Like, are the tanks going to shoot?
No, they're not tanks, by the way. They're armored personnel carriers because tanks would not work on any of the bridges coming into the city.
Too heavy?
Too heavy.
Well, I thought that was the assumption that all this stuff was going to screw up the infrastructure anyhow. Because for some odd reason, most civilian streets in the United States are not designed for combat vehicles to roll through them. I don't know what it is.
I mean, I don't know. I saw Red Dawn in like 1980 something. There were tanks in there. In the middle of Denver, Colorado. You have tanks in Washington in real life.
Why can't you have tanks
in Washington? Swamp, they sink. That's all. Straight to the bottom.
Well, it does sound a ton of fun though.
Yes. And so you costing us, what, $90 million? So
is that it?
That's not so bad. Anything else before we wrap up? Any other celebrations or victories or alcoholic stories that we... I'm pretty sure I'm the only one who told alcoholic stories here, but whatever.
I did not tell any alcoholic stories.
Do you want to tell one before you... we sign off?
I mean, I can. I remember the night of my wife's bachelorette party. Her friends took her out, and my friends had to come over to my house, and we were just playing like beer pong or something. And I got really, really, really drunk, and I was yelling in a French accent saying I was Napoleon.
This is a good choice. I like that.
I can't imagine why.
I don't know.
I will also say I'm in no hurry to ever be married because I have a lot of receipts coming my way from my friends' bachelor parties that I do not want them to cash in on. I'm hoping, my hope is that I outlive them. And by the time I actually do get married, they're too old to remember or to do that anymore. But yes,
you just keep pushing it, right? Like they're
yes, like one of my best friend, one of my best friends, my roommate from college. I created a drink for him for his bachelor party, which was essentially just going into the kitchen and finding whatever liquor was around and pouring it into a cup.
So it wasn't even like a rhyme or reason where it's a mixed drink. It's just literally like, oh, there's some tequila here, there's some rum here, there's some vodka here, and then here's some Coke for Kyer. Yeah, he ended up throwing up that night.
I wonder why.
There's no proof that it was my fault. It could have been anybody's fault.
It's true. Lots of people were probably giving him drinks.
Yes, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And there's been a few other incidences similar to that, and I'm just like, I can never get married because I'm almost certain that everybody's going to be like, we owe you one. My hope, again, is that they all forget that any of this happened.
Earl, why did you elope? Oh, I don't know.
I want to hope. I'm just going to be like, oh, I had my bachelor party already. It was fantastic. I'm sorry you couldn't make it.
Who was there? Well, I can't tell you. It was a very exclusive group.
It's a stupid secret. They, you know, they wanted to invite you, but they couldn't. It's a whole thing. But yes, there's a lot of I'm owed a lot of receipts in my life. And I'm just hoping to... I'm essentially hoping to outlive everybody so they forget that they owe me this stuff.
It seems like a plan.
Yes, I don't know if it's a great plan, but we'll see. I assume none of them listen to this, so I don't have to worry about them finding out and like, oh yeah, it's been a few years for a couple of these things, so I'm assuming now that this stuff has calmed down. Because again, like I said, I have a really decent tolerance. So there's a lot of stuff where I've had friends and acquaintances who are like, oh, we're going to keep up with you. We're going to outdrink you. And it never works out well for anybody involved in that situation. But it really does not work out when it's like a big birthday or bachelor party or anything like that. So I'm just hoping to keep my head down for the next 40 years. And
40 years. All right,
and die in peace.
I just want to know what kind of estimated delivery date is August 1st, 2019 to August 29th, 2019.
Oh, that is.
That's pretty. Well, that's a pretty wide berth there.
I mean, that's pretty much all of August.
I ordered the Gears of War retrospective book that they're releasing, and that is they originally had a release date of sometime in July. That got killed, and now they've just updated me and told me it will come sometime in August.
Sometime in August. Well, I mean, it's like Christmas. You don't know what to expect and when to. I mean, Christmas, you know when to expect it. You just don't know what to expect. So in this case, you know what to expect. You just don't know when to expect it. Yeah, so it's like it could show up and it could be in your doorstep right now, for all we know.
Well, I guess. I mean, if they wanted to get it here early, it does say August 1st.
They say it was there. I said it could be.
It could. At any point between now and my birthday, it could be here. So.
It could be here. As it aside, since we, you know, I guess we do have some video game talk here and there. That did remind me for some odd reason that the big story this week, I think, was Remedy, because they bought back the Alan Wake IP from Microsoft.
Yes. Well, I guess the rights reverted back to them, the publishing rights for the... They own the IP. They didn't have the publishing rights to the IP.
Yes. And that was tied into the fact that I think the big rumor today is that Sony might be interested in purchasing them.
Oh, be interesting.
Those games sucked, by the way.
It would be interesting, though, because I think it would be weird to go from kind of having like this exclusive relationship with Microsoft, releasing this... multi-platform IP and control,
going and immediately back to being
an exclusive relationship with a platform holder. Yeah,
that would be weird. And I mean, I don't know. Like, it's like Alan Wake is like their one IP they really have.
Well, I mean, they got Control coming out, and didn't they do Quantum Break, or is that Microsoft?
Well, they did it for Microsoft. I don't know if they own that, or I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll see how the future goes. I do think a lot of third-party companies especially should start focusing on controlling their IP ownership.
Yeah. It's a shame because, like, Insomniac, like they did Ratchet for Sony, and like, but Sony owns Ratchet instead of Insomniac, and Insomniac's never been a Sony studio. They've always been, you know, second party at best.
You think, but I mostly think of them as a Sony studio,
right? But they have, like, they released Fuse with EA. And they released a.
Let's not talk about Fuse.
Sunset Overdrive. Fuse is a bad game.
I'm still very upset at Fuse.
There's a lot to be upset about with Fuse.
I still can't because I don't. This came up before E3 for me. It went from like this really kind of. I mean, essentially, Fuse would have been. I don't, I mean, you don't, there's no way to predict how successful it would have been.
But it was Overwatch been, before.
Yeah,
Overwatch.
It was Overwatch before it was Overwatch. It was before Overwatch and all that character driven games became a thing. And it's like, we're going to get rid of all these characters and personalities and kind of create this generic third person shooter. And it's like, one, it was a terrible decision at the time, but it seems even worse in hindsight when a lot of these IPs of this generation have become character-driven IPs like Overwatch, like Apex Legends.
Yeah.
I mean, even at the time, Team Fortress 2 was very character-driven.
And not that we think of Rainbow Six as character-driven, but like that's how those games are played. Like, each of the different characters is a different type of class, and they all have different, like, loadouts and how things work. Like, that's kind of the big multiplayer progression for this year. Even Call of Duty has, like, they've created a, you know, kind of class character based power ups within that system. So
if I were to kind of put a stamp on this generation's big takeaway, I would say that it's been really kind of this focus on class and characters. I mean, like, a lot of it is hidden under character specific traits, but a lot of it is just kind of this acceptance of class based systems that, you know, wasn't always there. Like, I think a lot of the times in the PlayStation 2, Xbox, PlayStation 3, Xbox 360 generation, it was very much like you want your characters to be exactly the same so that you can pick a character that you like and wouldn't be at a disadvantage. But I feel like this generation has very much been like, you're going to pick a character and you're going to get their traits, and you're going to pick a trait and enjoy that character that goes with it. And it's, you know, it's Overwatch is a big example, but again, you think of stuff, you know, Apex Legends is a big example recently. Like I said, Team Fortress 2, but you think of stuff like even Nintendo with ARMS, like you said, with Call of Duty, where a lot of this stuff, even like, I forget if it's, Halo, what is it? It's Reach and 4 introduced that stuff where you'd have not necessarily cast specific stuff, but you'd have loadouts.
Yes.
So you'd have specific traits like a bubble shield or a projection and stuff like that. And a lot of that stuff has become the norm in the video game industry.
Yep. Yeah. So, Fuse was ahead of its time, and they nerfed it by taking all the character out of it. It's a shame. It's kind of like Alpha Protocol.
Game of the year. Oh, wait.
You can't buy anymore.
Well, that's because the rights have reverted to Obsidian, and I'm assuming they're just working on an HD remastered.
that's
God
possible.
No, please no.
I mean, Microsoft seems willing to let their studios do whatever the hell they want, because you did see the footage of Ninja Theory's new game, right?
They showed some of that. Mm. Yes, I also signed up for the alpha.
Okay.
So hopefully I get into that. I got an email this week saying, this is what to expect. And I'm like, I don't care what to expect. Just let me know if I'm in or not.
Yeah. So, well, be interested to see what happens with Remedy and Sony. I kind of hope that they stay independent and can go both, play on both sides. But
yeah, it's an interesting dichotomy, because part of me is like, I hope they do remain independent, but the other half is like, I kind of get where Sony's coming from, and I kind of get where their fans are coming from. With Microsoft buying up all these studios recently, it's like, yeah, Sony needs to kind of fight back and get their own set of exclusive studios. It's going to be an interesting generation, because I mean, I don't know if rumor is the proper term. Speculation, maybe, was that, for the PlayStation 5, I forget who wrote about it this week, is that Sony is focusing more on like AAA titles and not necessarily the smaller games. And I'm like, part of me gets that from a business standpoint, but it's very reminiscent of Nintendo and the Nintendo 64. And the Dream Team, where it's like, we really want the best of the best working on our systems, and that the other people who provide those titles that, one, it kind of help fill out the gaps in your lineup, but also you don't necessarily always know where your next big hit's coming from.
Right, and I mean, part of what, made Sony so successful this generation was their embracement of those smaller games and like having a place for them to be on, because Microsoft was dropping the ball there early on. And so like they, Sony had that team that was, signing exclusive indie deals, and they had their own little studios making their weird things like that. What was that? The Order 1886, and it's like they had like these weird small games as well. And if they're just going to kind of go and focus on the big stuff, like, I don't know, that could backfire on them, because that's what Microsoft did. And then everyone was like, oh, they don't have anything. So we'll see. Anyway, that's it. I don't know. I don't know what's on tap for next week. I haven't really kept up with the releases.
It's 2 weeks out for
Marvel, right?
Marvel, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Fire Emblem's before Marvel. I'm sure there's other stuff coming that's important as well. It's summer's always a fascinating time for video games, because there's not a ton of major releases. After E3, there's a dearth of big news, which kind of makes sense, but also this year doesn't make sense. Like, I'm surprised like Sony's not out there beating drums after not being at E3 this year. The next major trade show isn't until like mid-August. I guess San Diego, but your game's not. I guess there's a Marvel panel, but that's in like 2 weeks at San Diego Comic Con.
About the Avengers game, or
yeah, okay. Well, it's about the Avengers game and Marvel Ultimate Alliance as well. Okay. And I guess the Spider-Man game had an update this week to include costumes from Far From Home.
Which I enjoyed. Good movie.
I enjoyed it. It's a good movie. There's like a butt coming out of my mouth right now.
What kind of butt? No.
I think my big butt with this movie is that I feel like the climax is much weaker than the second act finale,
where I think the first fight with the villain of this movie. Okay, I really feel weird. Mysterio is the villain of this movie. If you don't think Mysterio is the villain of this movie, you're an idiot.
Yes.
So the first major fight with Mysterio is so much better than the final fight with him.
I agree. There were some cool vibes going on there, like Scarecrow vibes.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of
Scarecrow. I have not seen it, by the way.
It reminded me a lot of Scarecrow from Arkham Asylum. The other thing, and this is more of just a general concept of the Spider-Man and MCU, is I still don't necessarily care for Iron Man kind of being the be-all, end-all of Spider-Man's character development.
Yeah, it was, I mean, Tony hangs over much of this film.
Yeah, not this Tony, the other Tony.
I mean, this Tony.
The lesser Tony.
Well, I don't know. He's a billionaire, but that.
He doesn't actually exist. I'm in the real world.
I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're better, Tony.
I am totally better by being in reality.
yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they progress going forward.
Without spoiling, I do think the mid-credit scene is a massive, massive, massive game changer, and I'm really curious to see what they do with that.
After Tony sees it, and we can talk more openly about it maybe in a couple months, because I have thoughts on that one.
Oh no. Oh,
yes, no. I have. There are I saw this movie last week, so I saw it before it came out. Humble brag. And it's always one of those things where it's like, I actually seen movies before anybody else because you get to kind of develop your own thoughts. But at the same time, it's also one of those terrible things because you can't talk to anybody about it.
Right.
So I just came out the movie theater. I'm like, I want to tell everybody about this, but I can't. And I just remember tweeting like, oh, like this is a mass, like that mid-credit scene is such a massive, massive game changer for the Spider-Man franchise. Based on the movies, that I kind of want to talk about it, but I'm also like, I'm respectful. I'm not like one of those magazines who are like, oh, we're going to spoil this the day it releases just because we can.
Well, I'm sure IGN has already spoiled all of the movie, so.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it spoiled several times already. And I'm just like, and if you pay attention, like, if you really pay attention, like, part of it was already spoiled by the world premiere because certain people were at the world premiere, but I just came out there and I'm like, I still want to talk about
people. Yeah, there's some fun stuff there, so
yes. And I think, you know, like, I don't think he's the best Spider-Man. I actually do think Toby and Andrew are better than him. But I think that Tom Holland does a good job. I think he does a good job. I think they give him really terrible decisions to make. And I think that's my issue with him. It's like he's a good Spider-Man who gets some really dumb decisions.
Yeah, for somebody that is supposed to be
a super genius. Yeah, and like, it's such a... Okay. Just to kind of... I'm going to throw this out there. This is a... general spoiler about Spider-Man Far From Home, so cover your ears for a brief second. I really don't like the fact that they turned the blimp into a joke. Like, I get what they're going for, and I know it's the MCU's tone, it's to do jokes and humor, but I felt like so much of this was like, there was an opportunity to kind of like touch on something serious with some of it, and then like every aspect of that turned into a joke.
Yeah, I mean, this one is heavy on the comedy, so...
And again, I don't mind it. I just find, like they couldn't take, like, one of the various storylines and make... Like, that, like the one kid that like Peter's envious of. It's like, you couldn't make a thing where it's like, I grew up 5 years, and, like, all my peers now are people who were 5 years older than me.
Yeah. I'm glad they did address it, though, so...
Yes, but I'm happy they addressed... I am and not at the same time, because I'm also like, What are the odds that like everybody who bimped out at that school were all Peter's friends in the first movie?
That is a. I mean, that was something I was saying about the trailer, right? It was like, what are the odds? Like, you know, 50% of the people disappear, and it just so happened that all of them were his friends.
Like, yeah, it's like that is a very neat 50%.
But yeah, it's worth seeing, Tony. So enjoy if you get out to it. Might be better than going to see the parade. So,
yes, that would definitely do Spider-Man Far From Home before I do that parade.
All right. We'll be back next week, maybe with Jeff and Pete in tow as well. And
more video game talks.
Yeah, more video game talk. Maybe sometime in there we will we'll sit down and play some Gears together.
Yeah, and we'll actually talk about video games and not alcohol for half of it.
No.
Who knows?
Yeah, it's whatever. All right, we'll be back next week. Earl, say goodnight.
Say goodnight.